when we put together a service, the announcements are sent to Greg, and then Greg pours over them and, you know, make sure that they're right. And then we have an editorial team that looks at them. And the reason is because we don't want to have announcements that look like this. Yeah, don't. These have actually been in church bulletins or been said at announcements. Yeah, don't let worry kill you off. Let the church help. The low self-esteem support group will meet Thursday at 7 p.m. Please use the back door. At the evening service tonight, the sermon topic will be, "What is hell?" Come early and listen to our choir practice. The church will be hosting an evening of fine dining, super entertainment, and gracious hostility. This evening at 7 p.m., there will be a hymn singing in the park across from the church. Bring a blanket and come prepared to sin. The rector will preach his farewell message, after which the choir will break forth into joy. They will sing "Break Forth Into Joy." For those of you who have children and don't know it, we have a nursery downstairs. Potluck supper Sunday at 5 p.m., prayer and medication to follow. The ladies of the church have cast off clothing of every kind. They may be seen in the basement on Friday afternoon. And ladies, don't forget the rummage sale. It's a chance to get rid of those things not worth keeping around the house. Bring your husbands. So I don't think we've had any gaffes like that. And I know Katie, when she's working on the rock notes and everything, make sure that everything is good with that. So our scripture is James 4:10. The title of this message is "Summoned to be Humble." But James 4:10 says, "Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you." So God, I thank you for the opportunity to be able to share your word. I know that it spoke to me, and hopefully it will speak to some people here. Thank you for the opportunity to gather together and not have to worry that somebody's going to come in and arrest us and impede what we're trying to do, and we're thankful for that. Just thank you for a great day for us. In the wonderful name of Jesus Christ, amen. Now, I don't know why it is, but the last couple of times that I was going to give a message, I had a dream the night before. And the strangest thing about it is they've both been about Scott. This dream that I had, Scott was supposed to come early and open the church and get some things done, and he begged off of it because it was just an absolutely beautiful day, and his golf game had improved. Yes, Marty, it had improved, his golf game. But, you know, he didn't want to stay around Nampa, so he drove to this course in Ontario that he'd heard about. And he gets up on the first hole, and it's a par 4, 450 yards. Now, for those of you who don't know a lot about golf, you know, most of us, I can't play anymore, but, you know, generally you'll hit a drive and it'll go 250, and you'll say, hey, that's pretty good. You know, the pros are hitting 300 and 350. Every now and then you'll get a hold of one and it'll go 275 or 300. But Scott got on the first tee, 450 yards. He swung, he hit that drive, and a big gust of wind came and it blew it, and it drove all the way onto the green and it went in the hole. He got a hole in one on par 4. And there was an angel sitting up there, and he was talking to God, and he says, "God, why in the world did you do that?" And he said, "Who's he gonna tell?" You know, so anyway. Thank you, Scott. You're very gracious to allow me to do that. And I do get permission ahead of time. Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, we talked about We were in Micah 6:8. And Micah 6:8 says, "He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God." Now, we talked about the first two portions of that as far as do justice and loving kindness. Actually, that whole thing is probably a three-part, but I combined the first two for last week. And I was told I could preach until that candle burned out, the one that's in the front. So just so you know that. So I want to lay some groundwork for today's message. And we're going to be talking about a couple of parables that Jesus taught. And it has to do with being humble. And really, we could have just stopped with the first verse. And that could be a message in itself. But so Jesus, you're going to find out he's in the house of a prominent Pharisee. And the term Pharisee means separated one. Now, this group can be traced back to at least the second century B.C., It probably began as a legitimate attempt to protect the Jews against the influence of, you know, Greek pagan culture. And during the time of the Second Temple from 515 BC to 70 AD, so during that period from 515 BC to 70 AD, scribes and rabbis pored over the words of the scripture, interpreting every detail. What constituted work on the Sabbath? What could be allowed within the law? According to the law, burdens were not to be carried out on the Sabbath. This meant that exactly what constituted a burden had to be clarified and then defined. On the surface, the scribes had a good reason for interpreting the law. They didn't want anybody to break it inadvertently. But their interpretations over time increasingly emphasized external adherence to the law, and its interpretation became a source of pride instead of a tangible expression of the love of God. And by Jesus' day, the rabbis and scribes had become so strict that they accused the disciples of breaking the Sabbath because they had simply plucked some heads of grain, rubbed them in their hands, and eating them as they walked through field of grain. So go to Luke chapter 6, verse 1. It says, "Now it happened that he was passing through some grain fields on a Sabbath, and his disciples were picking the heads of grain, rubbing them together in their hands, and eating the grain." And, you know, earlier Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, and that absolutely enraged the religious leaders. It was obvious to them that healing was classified as work and was prohibited by the fourth commandment. And that's in Deuteronomy 5:14. It says, "But the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your cattle in your sojourner who stays with you, so that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you." Now, in this case, I went ahead and put the footnote there and what it says. You know, to Jesus, it was common sense and a good deed that Jesus revealed their hypocrisy, because earlier in the chapter before, if an ox fell down into a pit, the Pharisees would allow the ox to be rescued, even if it was the Sabbath. But they wanted to prohibit Jesus from rescuing a human being. Their outrage at Jesus's healing was really kind of messed up, don't you think? Yeah. And it came from that own interpretation that we were talking about earlier, their own interpretation of the law and not from the law itself. The scribes and rabbis had thought through, categorized, and defined all the minutiae of the law, but they had missed its central point. The Lord had given the law to encourage the Israelites to love him and to love others. He had never prohibited doing good on the Sabbath. Let's go to Mark chapter 12. And it's chapter 12, verses 30 and 31. And it says, "And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There's no other commandment that's greater than these." Kind of a big difference in saying, hey, you can't heal on the Sabbath, in this verse. So we're going to get into a parable here, and it's going to be a man invited Jesus to a meal, and he was one of the leaders of the Sanhedrin. The fact that Jesus was invited reveals that these religious leaders at the highest level had come to notice him. Their reaction to his teaching and works was often negative, and here's an example. Let's go to Luke 11:38. Now, this is a little bit of a sidelight from the message, but one I think that we should go down. And Jesus gives a response to a surprised Pharisee, and that was Luke 11:38. And it says, "When the Pharisee saw it, he was surprised that he had not first ceremonially washed before the meal." Now, this was, beforehand, that something that he had observed. And then we'll go to 39 through 44. And I'll come back and we'll visit this. "But the Lord said, 'Now you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and of your platter, but inside of you, you are full of robbery and wickedness. You foolish ones, did not he who made the outside make the inside also? But give that which is within is charity, and then all things are clean for you. But woe to you, Pharisees, for you pay tithes of mint and rue and every kind of garden herb, and yet disregard justice," which we talked about 2 weeks ago, "and the love of God. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. Woe to you, Pharisees, for you love the chief seats in the synagogues and the respectful greetings in the marketplaces. Woe to you, for you are like concealed tombs, and the people who walk over them are unaware of it." And then he goes in later and he attacks the lawyers too, but we're not going to talk about this. And remember, I said earlier when I made that statement that their interpretations increasingly emphasized external adherence to the law instead of the cultivation of an attitude of submission before the Lord. Perfect obedience to the law and its interpretation became a source of pride. Now we go to Luke 14, verse 1. "And it happened that when he went into the house of one of the leaders of the Pharisees on the Sabbath to eat bread, they were watching him closely." You know, the Pharisees saw themselves as theological watchdogs. And they were intent on finding some kind of flaw in Jesus' teachings and his actions. And it was significant that this was the Sabbath. And Jesus had already had at least three other confrontations with them over Sabbath observance. But we're seeing over time how the Pharisees and all the scribes and all that time, and rabbis, the time that they spent in the Word, how they were really changing, you know, God's intent. And in this parables, and these aren't long parables like we're used to, but there's something to it. So go to Luke 14, verses 7 through 9. Now, We said earlier that they were watching Jesus. Well, he'd been doing some watching of his own. You know, I'm sure that, you know, if it was around then, they'd have been going, "You got my eye on you." But he knew that. And he'd go back, "I got my eye on you." So Luke 14:1, it happens that when he went into the house of one of the leaders of the Pharisees on the Sabbath to eat bread, they were watching him closely. Now go to verse 7. And he began speaking a parable to the invited guest when he noticed how they had been picking out the places of honor at the table. And he said to them, "When you're invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for someone more distinguished than you may have been invited by him. And he who invited you both will come and say to you, 'Give your place to this man,' and then in disgrace, you'll proceed to occupy the last place." The places of honor, well, first of all, the banquets were set up in a U shape. And so the inviter would sit at the bottom of the U, and then the places that were the most honor were on to his left and to his right. And Jesus observed that some of the guests were seeking out those honored places. And this actually has applications both to our earthly and our spiritual relationships. In Luke 14:10, he says, "But when you are invited, go and recline at the last place, so that when the one who has invited you comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will have honor in the sight of all who are at the table with you." Now, the phrase friend indicates that there was a deep affection and respect for the guest. In Jesus' parable, the host loves and respects the guest despite the lowly position that the guest has taken up. When I read recline at that place, I wondered, they didn't really have recliners back then, but you know, that was some verbiage that was used, that they would sit and lean back and take their place. So when the guest is invited to the higher place, the host also publicly gives him honor in the sight of those who are at the table with him. Now, that word honor means praise or of good reputation, and this is in contrast to the arrogant man who gets moved, and now he's disgraced because he's sitting where? In the last place, the farthest away from that table. And if we go in Luke 14:11, Jesus actually concludes the parable with the principle that I said earlier that applies to spiritual and earthly relationships. And it says, "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. You know, it doesn't always work in the human arena, because, you know, there are a lot of people that, you know, seek that high place. They enjoy fame, and they have fortune up until the end of their lives. But on the other hand, there are many who have ridden the wave of self-importance only to crash. And we see that a lot with a lot of celebrities that, you know, have drug overdoses. Sometimes they die. And, you know, sometimes things happen that put them down at the bottom. And, you know, it always makes me think of how often do we think and see that, you know, I had to get to the lowest point in my life before I could actually reach out to God. Because at that point, they're used to being a God unto themselves. Now, Jesus had been addressing a group. Now he's addressing the host. 14:12 says, "And he also went on to say to the one who had invited him, 'When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or your rich neighbors, Otherwise, they may also invite you in return, and that will be your repayment. But when you give a reception, invite the poor. I'm sorry, we're in 13 now. When you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. And then in 14, it says, and you will be blessed since they do not have the means to repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. You know, the Pharisees attributed to the plight of the lame, the crippled, the poor, the blind, and said it's because they sinned. But Jesus said, you need to broaden your guest list. How many of you guys, and you don't have to raise your hands, but think about it, over Thanksgiving, you hear of somebody who doesn't, you know, have any place to go or anybody to visit that might not be in your normal circles, and you ask them to come and celebrate Thanksgiving with you. I know that's been a great blessing, because in the all the Thanksgivings I've been through, I know that on a couple of occasions we actually did that. And the first time it happened at my behest, I didn't know it was going to happen. And I kind of had the attitude of the Pharisees. I wanted to hang out with my friends, my family, my relatives, not these people that I would not normally hang out with. But you know what? It was a great blessing to be able to do that. The Pharisees held themselves aloof from the sick, the lame, the blind, the poor. And they convinced themselves that this separation enhanced their own righteousness. And you know what? Nothing can be further from the truth. Not a thing. And in this, it talks about when you have these meals and you're inviting your friends and your relatives. Sometimes you don't want to invite your relatives, but that's a different story. If not, you need to get right with that relative so you want to invite them. You invited them because there would be payback. Now, when they had a feast or they had a great dinner, they would be obligated to invite you. But in this case, they didn't have the means to be able to invite the host back. So there wasn't going to be a quid pro quo, I think is the word for it. You know, you give here and then I'll give here. And by inviting those that were lame, crippled, poor, blind, and sick, it was out of love. Because you weren't going to get anything back for it. Not going to be any repayment. Not going to be any earthly reward. You'd actually be manifesting God's love without any kind of distinction to it at all. Now, it did say, we did read 14. Yes, we did. Okay. It did say that you will be blessed. You'll be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Now, in Mark 10:42, it's not Mark, it's Matthew. And whoever in the name of a disciple, gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water, to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. Now, it's noteworthy that the reward comes at the resurrection of the righteousness. Good deeds are not means, but they're the fruit of our salvation. Now, you know, I'm not going to say that by doing these things that, you know, that gets you to heaven, because there's something else that's involved with that. Now I want to go back and let's go back and talk about to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. Do justice, do the right thing. I was talking with Gail, we were talking about some issues that maybe people came out to work on the house and it was subpar. But years and years and years ago, made a decision to buy a used washing machine. Not that could afford a new one, but thought, well, if we can get a used one that works just as well, you know, why not save a few bucks? So there was a company in Glendale, Arizona, and they were advertised as a Christian company. They were in a Christian magazine. And their motto was, we will do the right thing. Well, they brought out the washing machine and got it all hooked up, but they didn't put the drain hose down far enough into the drain. It worked its way out. And that morning, before I'd left for work, I started some laundry. And boy, did I get a surprise when I came home. Our house had all tile floors except for the bedrooms. And there were three bedrooms that were adjacent to that laundry room. But came home and there was an inch of water, I would say, and that might be conservative, all over the floors. And it worked its way into the bedrooms, into the carpet. So I called them up and they contacted their insurance company. And the insurance company said, well, we'll replace the carpet in the two rooms that were just adjacent to where the flooding happened. Thing is, it worked its way all the way down the hall into the master bedroom also. And then there was a bedroom that was kind of halfway in between. And so they were willing to pay to replace the carpet in two of the rooms, but not the four bedrooms. So I called up the owner and I said, we have a problem here. And he said, well, what's the problem? And I said, well, I want to come down and talk to you about it. And so I drove down there, and I wasn't angry, mad, just talking to him just like I'm talking to you right now. But I said, here's the problem. And I explained it to him, and he said, well, the insurance company will only pay for those two rooms. And I said, well, your ad says that you'll do the right thing. You're relying on the insurance company to make that decision for you, what is the right thing for you to do? And he said, well, that's the best I can do is what the insurance company says. Now you tell me, is that the right thing? No. You know, replace the carpet in all four rooms. I said, I believe, based on your stance, your Christian walk, your company damaged me. The right thing for you to do is to replace the carpet in all four bedrooms. And he said, well, no, I'm going with what the insurance company says. Was that justice? So, you know, and then I told him, I said, well, I'll write a letter to the editor of the, you know, magazine and explain to him our situation and how you've got, you know, your saying down there that says you'll do the right thing. And you need to change it to, we'll do the right thing as long as it doesn't cost us anything. Sometimes doing the right thing does cost us. Sometimes it costs us a lot. So in Micah it says to love justice, and loving justice is doing the right thing, making sure that the right thing's done. And we talked about a couple weeks ago, you know, you see somebody come speeding by you and you go, well, where's a cop when you need one? And then you see them pulled over maybe later and you take great joy in the fact that that person got pulled over and got a ticket, you know. Well, what were his circumstances? Maybe he's got a pregnant wife in the car and he's going to the hospital. Or maybe his one of his kids has a terrible cut and they need to go to the ER. You know, you don't know all the circumstances around it. But then the next part of that verse in Micah says to love mercy. And I have left out something. Can we go back to that James 4:10 slide, if you can find it? Yeah, it says, humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you. And I have a reason for going back to this. And I gave the definition of a very good friend of mine said the definition of humbling yourself is not to think less of yourself, but to think of yourself less. And yes, it was a good old Southern boy that did it that way and told it to me that way. Can we go to Proverbs 29:23? It says, a man's pride will bring him low, but a humble spirit will obtain honor. Does that tie into inviting the guest and him sitting at the last place and then being offered to come up front? And then Luke 1:51-52 says, he's done mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who were proud in the thoughts of their heart. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, and he has exalted those who were humble. You know, Jesus is really addressing the holier-than-thou attitude. We need to be humble if we want to further the kingdom. And we also have to remember that we too can be susceptible in whatever our rank is. Maybe you teach a small group, or maybe you're an elder in the church, or maybe you're on the governing board. And when you start looking at those things and puffing yourself, look at me, I'm an elder. You know, it's like you want to be known by your house, the car you drive, your neighborhood, the people you associate with, or even the church you go to. You think God's impressed with any of those things? No, he's not. So if we can go to the last slide, then I'm going to chat for a minute. So some practical points from today's message. It's God's will that we should not try to elevate ourselves. A presumptuous and arrogant Christian alienates others. Now, I kind of added that in. We didn't see that so much in the verses, but I want you to think about that. How many times have you witnessed to somebody, or were just talking to somebody about God, and they said, yeah, but you know what? I've been hurt more by a Christian than I have by anybody else. You know, whether it be in a business situation or a personal situation. And usually it's somebody who's pretty arrogant in their faith. When we remain modest or humble is when God elevates us. We should always seek to glorify God, not ourselves. And serving others reveals how we trust God to provide for us. I want you to think about how all that ties in with to do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. Because that in the Old Testament, Micah's saying, you know, that's the one thing that God requires of you. Now, the Old Testament was not written as a law for us to follow. It's for, you know, our learning. We can learn so many things from it because we know when Jesus Christ came, he replaced the law and he had new commandments that are easier and harder to follow than what we see in the Old Testament when you look at the Ten Commandments. And I know in our Tuesday group, we spent a lot of time looking at verses like, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and you'll love your neighbor, you know, as yourself. You know, that was the one great command that Jesus gave us. And we have to make decisions sometimes on what's important to us, to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. That verse has meant a lot to me, and the first time I remember it being taught, it meant a lot to me because, you know what, I wasn't walking humbly with my God. I was kind of into the house, not so much the car. Somebody gave me an old 84 Ford Escort station wagon with 185,000 miles on it. So I don't think when I was driving it around, there were many people saying, I'd really like to have that car. That would be so cool if I had that car. You know, even today sometimes I go, man, I would really like to have that car. And you know, if there was a good reason for it, I'd have it. But the car is not what makes you. And again, when we talk about that, the car is not the end, it's just a means to help you get to the end. If you got to go to the grocery store, or you got to go to the doctor, go to work, you know, whatever that may be. We do have one thing that we do know, and sometime we'll talk about this, but rewards at the resurrection. You guys know that you'll get rewards for things you've done over time. And one of those that I can really think of is going back to that verse where we're talking about inviting somebody that maybe not be so cool at Thanksgiving. You know, they don't fit in your normal circle of friends. Might be uncomfortable for you to sit at a table with them. Really, the main point I'd like to see from today is that it's God's will that we should not try to elevate ourselves. When we elevate ourselves, is it easy for God to get the glory? No, not based on our actions and et cetera. But God's going to get the glory one way or the other. So I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to kind of share from my heart and, you know, some of the things that I've been learning. And a lot of these verses still apply to me today. So what is it, Romans 12:1-2 that's Romans 12, right? 12, 1 and 2? Am I right? Okay. That you know, you renew your mind. What do you renew your minds to? The Word of God. So it's God's will that we should not try to elevate ourselves. When we remain modest and humble is when God will elevate us. And that's when God gets the glory. So I think the worship team's going to come up with another song. By the way, you guys do a great job. We get here early, and I love listening to them even practice. But I want to make it available to you if, number one, you don't know God in a personal relationship, that you can talk to me or probably just about anybody at this church, and they'll be happy to talk to you about it. Our elders, Ralph was up here, and Scott was up here, Chris was up here. And secondly, if you haven't been maybe as humble as maybe you should be, and you'd like to have a prayer about that, let us know. But again, I thank you for the opportunity to be able to share my heart. Let me pray real quick, and then you guys can do your thing. Lord, just thank you that as we humble ourselves, you elevate us. And how much you dislike it when we try to elevate ourselves. I thank you that we can have a heart for you, a heart for your word. And in that, we know that we're going to do the right thing. We're going to love mercy. We're going to love it when somebody doesn't get what they deserve. and that we're going to walk humbly with you. So God love you, and have a blessed day, and, you know, tell somebody today, give them a hug and tell them you love them, okay? All right, thank you guys.